Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The month of June is heating up with a ton of exciting sports action, and BetOnline is where you can find it. From basketball and hockey playoffs to baseball's marquee matchups, including prop bets and futures, BetOnline has all the latest odds, news, and information for your online sports betting needs. So visit the website today and use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, or pitch, head over to BetOnline and start playing today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
And, hey, I know we talked to our audience, Mary Claire.
I'm sorry.
No. It's all part of the whole routine.
All right.
Hey, everybody. That was the voice of Mary Claire Dale. You'll hear her later. You know, normally I say good morning, everybody, talking to you guys. But Mary Claire is like ready to roll. She's like, yeah, I'm ready. Anyway, hey, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. This is Bill Roden. I'm upstate New York in an undisclosed location and joined by my friend and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's happening?
Not much. You know, watching these NBA playoffs, a lot of injuries. I guess that's just part of sports, as we'll get into later.
Yeah, I guess. Well, we're going to try to make a connection between the dehumanization of both sports, the NFL and the NBA, how they run these guys like racehorses, you know. Anyway, we're going to kind of rely on Mary Claire Dale, who's an AP legal affairs writer, who joins us, has written a great story, and I'm feeling guilty because I didn't really drill down on this, but it's probably at the core of, again, we talk about this dehumanization, particularly in an NFL, which 70-something% of the players are African-American. And Mary Claire has reported a great story about NFL race norming in dementia settlement cases. Well, first of all, Mary Claire, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here.
You know, it was really great having you. And again, you wrote a really great story that hasn't gotten a lot of play, probably for good reason. Because it seems at some level, just when you say race norming, it's just like when they talk about critical race theory. I mean, you say things, and at some point, they have no meaning. So explain. We're gonna double back and explain even more, but just give us a sense of what is race norming and how did that become an issue? But first, let's drill down on what is race norming.
Right. And it's understandable that people haven't heard about it because it did go rather unnoticed in the settlement until about 2018. Well, in medicine, especially in neurocognitive medicine, these tests were designed in the 1990s to really evaluate how people who might or might not have things like dementia, how they compared on tests to their peer group. So you would be tested on a number of things like language skills, executive function, identifying animals or number sequences. And then they would score or sort of put you on a curve based on things like your age, your gender, your educational level, and race. And this was designed, again, in the early 1990s by a doctor in San Diego who used really a fairly small sample group of Black people in the tests. And in San Diego, they may have largely been military. They may have also been people who were educated during the Jim Crow era and were disadvantaged. And so when you compared how someone did in that peer group among Blacks in 1990s, you know, in that era, if you got a 60 out of 100 on a test, that might have been, you know, a B or an A compared to your peer group. Whereas for a white person who, again, in that era, maybe was more advantaged educationally or otherwise, that might have been a D. In neurocognitive testing, or at least in the NFL case, you want to get the D in a way because that means you've had this disability and they're trying to test for disability. The problems with the way those the Heaton norms are being used in this settlement, the lawyers for Black players say, is that one, they're binary. It's either Blacks and non-Blacks. And obviously in America today, there's all sorts of people of mixed race and, you know, different races. And really, people are not the men in the NFL. They are almost their own peer group. They came up in perhaps a similar fashion. They typically had 3 years of college. You know, they played in the league. So it's really not, they say, you know, accurate to compare them to other populations. They should really be compared to each other.
So in other words, let's say, let's just for the sake of argument, let's say one Black guy, you know, suffering from dementia comes in who, you know, may have left University of Colorado after 2 years. But another Black man, you know, graduated from Harvard, working on a master's, but what they do is they, now, well, y'all are both Black, so it doesn't really matter. So we're gonna put you in the same box, and we're gonna detract. We're gonna use race. You know, it's really racism, to avoid having to pick. So they just put Blackness becomes put in this box, right?
Right. And I think in medicine, it was a very crude construct, or if that's the right word, proxy rather, for a socioeconomic picture. Again, they were trying to say, well, if this person, you know, because of their race historically did not have the right, the exact same, you know, access to education or socioeconomic level, et cetera, we might miss them if we don't, you know, look at that holistically. But in this case, as some of the lawyers have very eloquently argued, most of the men in the NFL had 3 years of college, at least these men of this age who are retired. And so they are more alike than to each other, whatever race they are, than unalike, and maybe more like each other than they might even be with other people of their own race, whether it be Black or white, because they did have, you know, in one case, there's a case on appeal right now to the NFL where the person graduated from Stanford. I believe it's Amon Gordon. And, you know, to your point about these are highly educated men who performed, on the field in very difficult circumstances.
Well, how did you get onto the story? And well, before we do that, why, in your estimation, is this an important story?
Yeah, it's important. I got onto it because of a lawsuit that was filed last year on behalf of two players. Kevin Henry and Najee Davenport last year filed a lawsuit alleging that it violated the federal civil rights law and was on its face discriminatory because people in the league or retirees were being treated in disparate ways in such a concrete fashion, you know. But the suit was thrown out, and their suit, they filed the suit after trying to change it and correct the problem through the administrative process. One of the things is the NFL, you know, the fund is being done privately. You know, we in the following the courthouse only see things when they're filed in court, but we don't really see the claims. They're not public. We don't see how much somebody gets, how often they're rejected. So we're only seeing them when there's a challenge to it that reaches the courthouse. And in this case, they were so frustrated after 2 years of fighting in-house that they did file a suit. It was thrown out. However, you know, amid the uproar, including the demands for racial justice that followed 2020, this story caught on, and the judge has now said, you know, while they can't attack the settlement that they're a part of, that sort of legally she threw it out on procedural grounds, she does want it addressed, and she's asked a magistrate and the two parties to come together and revisit it. And the NFL, in the wake of this, has just announced last week that they will not demand that the scores are race normed in the future, and that they've agreed to revisit and rescore the players who were denied awards who believe they were unjustly denied.
Well, this is a great story. Now you normally you're a legal affairs writer, so you're not. It's not like you cover the NFL.
I don't. But there's been a number of times over the years where, of course, as you can imagine, sports and cultural issues do come into the courthouse. So, and of course, you know, it is always fascinating. I think so many people, I think sports, you know, has such a big place in the American culture, and they, people follow these issues that come up with it, you know, in sports with such great interest, as you know. I mean, your columns really represent that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just curious, again, as a journalist, and I don't know if you're an NFL fan or not, but sort of the broader context, what was your thought as a, you know, as a journalist, as a woman, as someone who I'm you know, you're kind of attuned to, you know, biases. This easily could have been, there have been certain studies where women were sort of, because of certain assumptions, were on the short end of the stick, and all designed to not, normally it has some economic thing. In other words, this was all designed to use, in this case, racism, not to pay people. I don't know what my question is, but what do you think?
I totally know where you're going with that, I think. In the course of my reporting, I kind of did some broad interviews with people and thinking about settlement funds. And really, it comes down to how do you value a life? And in this case, an injured life, right? Mm. And so one of the people I spoke with was Ken Feinberg, who I believe was the person who administered the 911 fund and many others. And he said in the 911 fund, as an example, and in others that he led, they approached the settlement fund with the idea that they were going to, quote, lift all boats, meaning that if a white male was a secretary in the World Trade Towers, and they had decided that his lifetime economic expectation that was lost was X, that any other person that held that job would get that amount. They were not going to discount it, even though sadly in our society, had it been a Hispanic woman in that job, her lifetime earnings would probably have been less. Mm. But they decided to, you know, again, go about it with this idea to lift all boats and pay them, you know, what the white male would have earned. I will say in that case, I believe the funding was from the government, you know, so they were, and it was the, he told me that the administration was behind that, you know, they wanted to do that. In this case, you have a payer, you know, is the NFL. And at one point, the settlement fund had been capped at $765 million. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, at that point, the NFL was not appealing so aggressively because they kind of probably didn't care how the pie was going to be divided. That was the bill that they had agreed to. But then the judge realized that the fund was going to run out too quickly. And so she ordered it to be uncapped. And at that point, the NFL's appeals, especially for dementia, which let's face it, is probably a somewhat subjective diagnosis, more so than Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and some of the other illnesses in the scheme. That's when the NFL began appealing. And now we're at a point where only about 28% of the dementia claims that have been signed off upon by doctors, and these are approved doctors in the settlement fund, only about less than 3 in 10 are actually getting paid on. And that is because the NFL is really going back and looking, you know, for ways to to probably say we've got to contain the damages, you know, that we're paying out. And I think it's not only economic damages, but reputational damages. Everyone, parents, women, moms are concerned about their sons playing football now, seeing, you know, the number of men in this settlement who later in life have these very debilitating brain injuries. Some of the medical ethicists are saying that the NFL, given this history of head injuries, should really be trying to include people and not look for ways to exclude them.
Well,
do we know the breakdown at all between the settlements or the payments that have been dished out already between white and black players?
You have just asked the billion-dollar question. That is the very figure that the lawyers for the black players who sued have been trying so hard to get. They've been working on trying to get that number, as did I when I was doing my reporting. And so far, we don't have it. I think they still hope to get it, but it's unclear whether that number will really ever see the light of day.
Wow. Are those numbers available?
That's what I'm saying. At the moment, you're asking, like, does someone have them? We think the settlement fund would have a way to look at their payouts and you know, maybe they would have to do a little bit of coding to get it, but we think they could figure it out. I believe, let's see, there have been, I think it's between, my memory serves, 2,000 dementia claims have been filed, something under 600 have been paid out on. And there's, I think, a small number, maybe 100 other types of diagnoses that have been paid out on. But really, it's the dementia claims that we're looking at here. So, I don't think it would be that hard to figure out. As I think you pointed out at the top of the show, something like 70% of active players and maybe 60% of all retired players are Black. So we can maybe make some guesses about those numbers.
You'd have to go just almost person by person.
And yeah,
it's right. Definitely doable, and it's not only is it doable, but it almost puts a fine point on what we're talking about. You know, it's one thing to talk in the abstract and generalities,
right? And the lawyers are really eager to see that number because they believe it could be as high as 2 or 3 times as many white claims are being proved as Black. Now, I will say there's a little caveat because I believe that it's probably true that the white retirees skew older because of the league's history. And so therefore they are probably, there's some reason that they would be higher, but maybe not that much higher.
We just mentioned a couple of times, so the NFL approximately 70% Black now, moving in the future. Have you seen, or has it at least been argued that may have something to do with the race norming or with the insistence on using race norming instead of, say, socioeconomic norming?
Yeah, well, you do have to wonder. I mean, again, if they can limit claims and damages among the Black players, they're limiting it in the majority, right? Sort of the flip side of that, I was recently interviewed, did a show with Ken Jenkins, who's a retired player who I believe went to Bucknell, but he and his wife have been really the driving force behind this petition drive that dropped off 50,000 petitions at the federal courthouse after the judge dismissed the lawsuit. And they, again, asking to see the numbers that you just asked about, the data. And we were being asked about whether we thought this settlement and the dementia problems and things would really lead to the demise of football. But he said, you know, as long as there are poor, largely Black youth who want to, you know, make it in this world, he believes there will always be more people willing to play football. That was his thoughts.
Interesting. This last thing, this is kind of in the thing of you helping me do my job. What should we be reporting now? What's the next level of this? Because like I said, when I read your piece and read this, and I just felt bad. So, man, this is everything that I've kind of been, talking about in terms of, dehumanization and all that. And so anyway, what's the next level of reporting now? What's the next story?
Right. It's interesting. I wrote a few stories about it when the suit was filed last year and then when it was dismissed, and it really didn't get a ton of attention. It got some. But then when I reported just last week or two that the NFL had agreed to not only not insist on race norming going forward, but the big question is whether the scores in recent years, the players who were denied awards are going to be rescored. And again, that's that 1,400 people or so, and who applied for funds and were denied. And the NFL has said they would be willing to rescore people. And so that was a pretty key moment. These are mediations that are happening behind the scenes in the federal courthouse. And so we were a little surprised that they were making this statement on the record. But I think, you know, the two things we're looking for is what the data has been by race up until now, but also like what's going to change when they rescore them. You know, that will really show the bias that did exist. You know, if they rescore people, meaning to uncurve it for race, if you will. And, you know, if 50% of the people who were denied now get settlements, that would be very interesting. I'm not saying that's going to happen. But I don't know what the number is, you know. But right now the NFL is on course to pay something over $1 billion out over, it's meant to be a 65-year fund to accommodate everybody who was retired by 2014, I think it was. So, you know, however old they might be. But, you know, will it double their exposure to $2 billion? Even if it does, I mean, I know that that's not what the NFL hoped to pay in this settlement, but, you know, their recent TV contract is for $113 billion. So a lot of people would argue they have the money. And I think that, you know,
they make that in one game.
Well, it's more than I make at the AP. I know that. But, you know, I think that at this point, you know, the stories did cause quite a lot of outrage. And I think they might be willing to, you know, that's prompted them to be willing to open their paycheck a little bit more.
Yeah. And well, thank you so much. And number one, I hope I won't forget this, but I'd like to get your contact information off there, because I really would like to dig into this, because this is a really important story. So happy that you, you dug into this, because it's one of those subtleties that has just tremendous implications. And actually for all players, I mean, we're focused on Black players because it's such a bias, but the idea that the bedrock is the violence of this game and what it does to people, and how this institution will try, no matter what color you are, what they've got a business that runs on your body, you know, and they're going to try to, you know, get as much as they can out of you, and then pay you when you finally catch up to them, kind of pay you nothing, pay you peanuts.
I would be thrilled to talk to you. I can, as I said to somebody last week, I can really nerd out on this story because I have covered it for 10 years. And this was a, you know, I don't want to say glitch, that's too diminishing, but this was a storyline that no one saw coming. I mean, there were a few, the exclusion of CTE in the living, that was one. You know, there was a lot of obvious storylines that we knew were going to play out because the settlement was not far from perfect. And, you know, it's very hard to design a perfect settlement, I think. But a lot of people thought this was really done a bit too hastily. And really what it did was end the chance of a trial that was designed to expose what the NFL knew about the link between concussions and head injuries and what they did or did not do about it. I mean, these were fraud claims, you know. So the fact that it settled before discovery was very disappointing to a lot of people.
Yeah, that was my problem. And I forgot what this, I remember I may have even written a column about that when they settled. There were a couple of settlements, right? Maybe, are we talking about the same? There's one settlement that took place about was it the concussions or something? And I was just so disappointed for the reasons that you mentioned. That, wait a minute, I want to hear about this. When did they know? What did they know? When did they know? So are we talking about the same settlement?
We are. It's a class action. So the cases were consolidated for discovery before this judge in Philadelphia, and I cover that courthouse. So that's why I was lucky enough to kind of stumble into the story. And, but before discovery, they had arguments on the NFL's motion to dismiss the suit because they were under contract because of that, you know, because they said that the contract covered this issue. And but there was like wiggle room on both sides, meaning that the players had a little bit of uphill battle because of that argument. But there were some players who were playing not under contract for a period of time, and that gave this opening that potentially that rule would not apply to them, and they could get in the door to the courthouse, if you will, and proceed with a suit. You know, I guess I meant arbitration. Like the NFL contract said, these things should be resolved in arbitration, not at the courthouse. But there were some players who, I forgot the reasons why, you would probably remember, were playing for a short bit of time without a contract. Maybe it was a strike or something, but therefore they had the right to proceed with the suit. And I guess in some ways, being that a lot of lawsuits are uphill battles, you know, there was some benefit to both sides settling, but certainly in terms of public the sunshine on the documents that the NFL had and the history of the NFL's behavior in this regard, that was something we were all hoping to learn more about. I would love to talk more with you about it.
This is really, 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 really great. Our guest is Mary Claire Dale. She's an AP legal affairs writer and a 2018 Nieman Fellow at Harvard. Where'd you grow up? I'm just curious.
Outside of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. Were you an NFL fan? I mean, are you an NFL fan? If you're in Philadelphia, you have to be. I'm almost, whether you like it or not. You know?
Of course. I was in Boston the year Philadelphia won, so that was fun.
Oh, great.
The Super Bowl.
what do you think of the 76ers blowing a 26-point lead?
Well, it's a rough morning for us here today. Again, I'm so honored to meet you guys. Thank you so much.
No, pleasure. Pleasure and honor is ours. Thanks, Mary Claire.
Take care.
That was great Mary Claire Dale. She's an AP legal affairs writer and wrote, really broke and has been on this whole idea of NFL race norming in Demetrius settlement cases. We're going to get back on that. So thanks for that. Thanks again to Jamal for reaching out to her and getting her.
If you eat meat and want the best bacon, the best steak, the best chicken, and the best salmon you'll ever eat, it won't come from a grocery store. You'll only find it on the family farm and caught by independent Alaskan fishermen. That's why you need Moinkbox.com. Why do just 4 companies control 80% of the U.S. meat industry? Because big food crushes the little guy. You can help change that with Moinkbox.com. So join the Moink movement today. Go to Moinkbox.com/believe right now, and listeners to this show get free bacon for a year with every box ordered. That's 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but for a limited time. It's spelled moinkbox.com/believe. That's moinkbox.com/believe.
You know, Jamal, we talked about, I was trying to draw a connection between NFL and NBA. There's a lot to talk about with the NBA playoffs. I mean, clearly the mainstream stations will cover a lot of that, but hell, we'll cover it too. Very fascinating stuff. I was at the Brooklyn-Milwaukee game on, I guess it was Wednesday?
Yes.
Was it Wednesday? Yep. Wednesday. Yep. Man, it was, as were you. You were there too. Yep. Surprised we need to see each other.
I didn't realize you were there. We were in the same section, I think.
Same section, yeah. I was there with the Roden Fellow, it was her first basketball game, NBA basketball game.
A great one to be at.
Oh my God, man, Kevin Durant, man. I don't know what it is about. Again, like I always say, I'm a cynical. I'm not a fan of any of this stuff. But that was quite inspirational to me, that performance. I mean, clearly, if you're a Milwaukee. If you're cheering for the Bucks, it wasn't inspirational.
They don't appreciate it.
Yeah. But what did you think, man? What did you think of that game? And what have you thought about the postseason so far? The dehumanization and injuries notwithstanding.
Right. No, I mean, yeah.
Fucking play.
Kevin Durant game was amazing. I think it was probably the best performance I've ever seen in person. 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists in a game, you know, the Nets had to win
to
stay alive. And it was interesting with Durant because it's a situation that he's not really in that much. I mean, he's all, you know, he's kind of most recently put himself in these situations where he had a lot of help, where, you know, Golden State, he had two other great players with him. Then he goes to Brooklyn with Kyrie, they get Harden. So he's kind of, it's been a long time since he really had to carry a team. And even when he was with Golden State, remember, he's the one who got hurt and left Steph alone to carry the team. So it was an interesting situation for him to find himself in and for him to come through like that because he's been doubted, you know, for some reason. But I mean, and then to do it in Brooklyn, and really he brought that Barclays crowd to a level I've never seen it before.
I know.
Kind of doubting whether it could get to, you know, and so, you know, it was like a real New York City moment.
Right. You know, and then they were down, you know, right. I mean, that's the whole thing. It wasn't like he had 43 points, but they were always, you know, they were ahead from the beginning.
You had to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were down like at some point by almost 18 points.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people were figuring, I mean, I went in figuring that's probably what's going to happen. You know, no Harden, even if he didn't line up, you know, Kyrie, of course, out, you know. But then it's like, and I was just kept thinking, well, if they get within 10 by the end of the half or somewhere, we probably got, there's a shot at this, you know. And you're right. I mean, after he started bailing them out and hitting shot after shot after shot, then I kept thinking, thank God Budenholzer is the opposing coach. Because, A, you got Harden out there who can't even walk.
Right.
So how do you not – I'm thinking maybe Budenholzer trying to be – but how do you not take this cat apart and make them take him off the court?
Right.
You know, clear out and say, we're going to go at you every until they take you out.
Right.
You know, I mean, how do you let a cat – you know, like that, even just stay on the court.
Yeah, and I'll give Budenholzer some of the blame, but I think a lot of it is the players too, because they were isolating Harden a lot. I felt like during the game, like it would be Drew Holiday or even Giannis, and the players themselves were bailing him out. I mean, you could tell them, okay, we're gonna isolate Harden. Give it to Drew Holiday. But if he's just going to shoot a jump shot, you know, if he's going to get a little nervous and, you know, not really do what he's supposed to do, it's on the players as well. I thought Harden played it smart, you know, daring these guys to shoot, you know, using his strength. He was protecting himself. I thought he did a good job. It's funny with Harden, statistically, he had a terrible game shooting. I think he was like 1 of 10 or over.
He played a great game.
But I thought he played a great – I thought that might have been his best – playoff game ever. He's known not to show up in these games. Now he's on a terrible hamstring. He still gets 8 assists, 8
right.
plays. I mean, he got exposed a couple times on defense, but then he also made some plays. I thought, I mean, to me, it changed my feeling about him totally.
Exactly. Now, me too, because you're right. We've been killing him, man. Those games when he's there, but not there.
Right.
You know, and here he was not there. I mean, he was there. And he was really present. And I just thought it made sense in a bizarre way to have him there.
Right.
Even like, I forget the name of this. Luke Conesecchi used to always talk about this guy. Maybe we'll have to Google it.
Right.
But who was the Spanish general who was dead, but they tied him up to his horse and sent him into battle to psych everybody out. I have to think about it. It's the Spanish general who's killed in battle, but they tied him. I mean, Lou Carter II, the former St. John's coach, used to always talk about when he was justified playing a star player.
Right.
He said it's like sending General Astellissimo or something into battle, even though they had him propped up in his horse and just psyched out the opposition. And oh my God, this guy is like.
right. That's perfect.
You know, I'll think of it at some point. But anyway, that was a great performance. And then I'm like stunned, you know, same thing, Kawhi's hurt, you know, so I'll be, well, that's it for them, you know, that's it for the Clippers, you know, because I kind of wanted to see them. It was a good story. Oh, well, that's done. Then I get a tape to then just lo and behold, looked at this morning. And, you know, what I do is like, you know, you get a DVR or whatever. And I go, you know, so I looked at the first half first quarter, they're up by six. I'm, what? Then I looked a little more. They're up by eight. I'm like, what? And then, you know, going to the third quarter, they're up by nine. I'm like, what?
Yep.
You know, and then it turns out that your boy playoff, they call it
Pandemic P.
Pandemic P. This guy is having a great game.
Went off. I think the Clippers put out a stat this morning saying that he's only the second player ever after Kevin Durant's game the other day to have over 35 and 15 in a playoff game or something like that, you know? So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I was watching that game. I fell asleep in the fourth quarter, but I was like, I kind of knew they were going to lose at that point. I was like, I'm tired. I'm going to sleep. The Jazz are going to lose. Donovan Mitchell's, you know, he's dealing with that, you know, limping around. I was like, there's no way. If he can't bring him back, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Wow. But, you know, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting the Jazz to win the next two games after, you know, once Kawhi went out. So,
yeah. I mean, it's a wrap, you know. And then last but not least, you know, look at Philadelphia, you know, I'm like, these cats up by 28 points. Well, it's over, you know. And then when I saw, I said, wait a minute, how did they blow a 28-point? So, of course, you know, all day today, they're bringing up all of Doc Rivers' previous, you know, collapses, you know. I don't know if that's
Doc right there. That wasn't a good look for Doc.
Oh, my God. At home. Losing the last
game is won. You know,
yeah,
I had a bet with a friend. I had 7.5 points. I said that Atlanta would lose by less than 7.5. When they start coming back, I was just worried about that. I was like, oh, whoa, they might come within seven and lose. I didn't expect them to win the game.
Actually win the damn game. So, you know, so I guess when you ask at this point, I mean, people be listening to this today. To me, when you say the biggest winners and losers of all this stuff at to date, you know, Kevin Durant, I mean, Trae Young, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Trae Young. And then, you know, I'm hearing these cats talk about, well, you know, Luka and Trae, well, you know, if you had to do it all, knowing what we know, and you had to do it all over again, and you still take Luka, that's the black tax. You know, how could you know everything you had to know, and you're going to still take, you know, Luka, and I guess maybe because he's 6'7", but also because he's white.
Yeah.
And having a white star at a franchise probably is a you know, in a league that's dominated by, but you know, everybody needs Tarzan,
It's one of the people even still talking about Luka right now. I mean, he's a great player. He was first team all NBA. I get it. You probably still do take him over Trae just off the height alone, you know, 6'8". Size matters in the NBA. That's just a fact. Right. So, cause basically I looked at it a while back. I was looking at their stats. Their stats are basically the same except for rebounding. And that's because Luka is 6'8", 6'9".
I just don't know if you put, and maybe it's a wash, if you put Luka Doncic with Atlanta. Because remember, man, Trae Young also played a little bit of defense, even though he was hurt. Luka Doncic plays no defense. I mean, in other words, he just, fuck it, I'll be down here. But I
mean, they both played no defense, really. And I mean, Trae has an excuse because he's so small. Like, right. You know what I mean? Luka doesn't have an excuse. You should be able to do a little something.
Right. Well, but you, as a GM, though, you would still take Luka, even knowing what you know.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, that size, you know, he's just big. I mean, you know, he can do, so it allows him to do some more things. Right. But I mean, if I'm Atlanta, people made the argument early on that Trae might be a better fit in Atlanta based on the fan base and all that kind of stuff. He's a little more flat. Well, Luka's kind of flashy.
Dallas didn't really need it. So I guess I'm trying to make something out of it. I guess it doesn't have to be this binary decision.
But I think I do agree. I think he gets that extra oomph of coverage and fandom because he is white. You know, like all of a sudden now people want to say he's the greatest 22-year-old ever to play. Right. I've heard people say that. Really? I looked at the stats yesterday because I heard people talking about it yesterday. LeBron had better and slightly better stats at age 22. Magic had about, you know, comparable stats at 22 and had more accomplishments. I think, remember, he won the whole thing as a rookie when he played. You know, he came in when Kareem got hurt.
How old was Kobe when Kobe was 22? Right, because he came in the league when he was 18 or something, right?
Yeah, Kobe's probably up there too, but Kobe probably doesn't have the the rebound and assist stats, you know, but, you know,
he already had it. Didn't he have a championship by the time he was 22?
Right. Well, he had Shaq too, you know. Yeah,
Yeah,
okay. I'll give Kobe, you know, I always try to throw the Shaq thing in there on Kobe, but I'll give Kobe his props.
See, Jamal, you're part of the problem, man. You're part of the same group of people who was probably killing Durant, because that's like somebody works for like the Dallas Morning News, or something like that, but has always wanted to work at the New York Times.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, you work at the paper, you do the best you can, right. And then you resources. I said, you know what? I'm never gonna get. I'm gonna take the job at the New York Times.
I never.
You kill him. Why are you killing me for doing that? You know.
And then, I never killed.
Then he was two Pulitzers.
I never killed Durant from going to Golden State or anything like that. All I said, if anything, I just said he did not have the career that LeBron had, in terms of, like, I felt like LeBron had just
okay, like who else has? Like who else has?
No, that's all I'm saying. I'm just saying when people try to say he was better than LeBron, that's the only, then I'll bring it up. Then I'll say, wait, well, LeBron, he actually took a team of nobodies to the finals one time. You know what I'm saying? But now Durant doing something like this, he's inching up there. He's inching up there.
But let me ask you a question before we move on. This whole, let's say Jamal, you know, you went to Poly Prep, right? You went to Poly, okay. And you're on a team, let's say there's a team that had a star player.
Right.
Right. And the star player got hurt, but you guys banded together and did really well, got to stay tight, but they called you got nobody. Well, man, you got a group of nobodies. Now, how would you feel, you got a group being called a nobody? I mean, you're somebody, right? You're somebody, and you guys decided that, well, we're on the team for a reason. We all have these skills that maybe I can shoot now. Now he ain't there. I've always been a scorer, but my role was not scorer, it was rebound. Well, hell, now I can score. Somebody else said, you know, I was a ball handler, but because of him, I couldn't ball handle. Now I can ball handle. But I'm gonna call you, I'm the spoiler, I'm gonna call you got nobodies. So same thing. Kawhi, whether it's Kawhi leaving or whatever, you know, we call the rest of the Clippers nobodies, or the rest of the Nets, nobodies, you know, or something. Right.
A little unfair of me. They are somebody. They're good basketball players.
I am somebody.
They're just not, you know, Clay and Steph or Dwayne Wade and Bosh, you know. But they are.
But even those guys need somebody. So the somebodies can't be nobodies. I mean, you know, all those great guys. It's not like we're talking about alpine skiing or bowling or like tennis.
Tennis, right?
You know? I mean, you need, you know, Tom Brady. I mean, you need.
Right.
You need people. You need people to protect you. You need people to catch. You need people. And you need an opponent like the 76ers, the Hawks needed the 76ers to be terrible to be able to. I mean, so you need somebody.
Right. No, I agree with that. And you bring up Tom Brady. I mean, smartest thing he did, obviously, was when he went to Tampa Bay, he brought a whole bunch of great players with him.
Right, 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 Avery. So, yeah. But that's good. That's just a little rant. You know, the Durant thing reminds me, how do you kill somebody from trying to better? Every time I get in these arguments, I realize that this is why we're in radio. You got to create shit and keep it going. You got to stir it because you got 3 hours to get whatever. You have to, like, create
it. People buy into that stuff and they live by it and they actually believe it. You know, because I don't think you kill them just for making the move. But I do think, or wanting to win championships, or and then he did. He proved himself in those finals. He won two finals MVPs. I mean, not like he was just along for the ride.
Yeah, I mean, had he not Draymond, had he not gotten hurt against Toronto, they probably would have won that game. You had the whole collective sigh of relief in Canada.
Right.
That this guy ain't there, because there's no way that we're gonna beat these guys with a healthy Kevin Durant. But I mean, like, you're working with UPS,
right?
Something, and you just have an opportunity to leave to go to a better situation. I like UPS and right. I like FedEx. I mean, I was just saying, all of us who work for a living, and that's the whole thing. You're one corporation, one company, or whatever, and then you want to get to a better corporation,
right?
Give you more of this, that. So anyway, that's. to me, it's you know, you hear this stuff, but I get it. You have to say, but I'm hearing cats who should know better. I listen to a lot of, you know, Sirius NBA radio during the baseball season, Sirius NFL radio during, but I'm listening to these guys, you know, Eddie Johnson, is that his name?
Yeah.
You know,
the ex son, I think.
Good bench player, good off the, you know, but who buys into this stuff. So how could you, as a former player, as they all like to call it, as a former player, kill a guy, you know, for leaving a situation that's untenable to go to a better situation where he could actually win a championship? He was not going to win a championship with Russell Westbrook.
Right.
He knew that. Yeah, he knew that.
He just went through it.
Yeah. He said, I love this guy. I'm not winning a championship with this guy. And guess what? Well, still didn't win a championship, you know? And right. He said, why not go to this team where I may win? Shit, man, I may play in the final like 3 more years.
Yeah. I don't understand. I guess the former player, they're fans also, maybe.
Right.
And then, jealous. You know, like Barkley killed Durant too. And he didn't he do the same thing? Didn't he go to Houston to try to join with Olajuwon and Drexler?
Right. And what is the constant strain of all that? And obviously, like, man, we all love Charles Barkley. I mean, right. you know, but still, but I think if you just purely look at as sports writers, that's what we do, you know. We kind of just look at these things. We get to compare generations. We get to compare, you know, that's what we do. We watch. You look where you are. You're in the press box, right. You know. And in the press box, that's why they have us sitting high up, you know, because that's what we do. We have the long view, the big view of a game, the big view of history, the big view of careers. How many careers, by the time you're 60 years old, you've probably seen about 6 generations
right.
of people, the beginning, middle, and end. You know, right. At some point, you'll be on people's sons and grandsons
right.
playing. So you get a chance to observe stuff. And, you know, this kind of stuff with, you know, I forget what my point with Durant or whatever. So, well, man, this cat, you know, he knew that. You remember when they lost, they were up 3-1 and they lost, and he probably said, man, I cannot win with this guy.
Right.
You know, I can't win with this guy, you know, and I really respect Durant, you know, because of all the chirping, you know, and we all face chirping in our lives where everybody knows what's better for your life than you do.
Right.
You know, and you know, man, I'm not spending another hour on this team in this city.
Right.
You know, I mean, Oklahoma City versus San Francisco.
You can't. Yeah.
I mean, that the Golden Gate.
And then you go to Brooklyn, you know, new franchise kind of, you know, New York City. You can't. I mean, it's a smart business move. And ever since KD has been in Brooklyn and I've got a chance to, you know, listen to him every day in the press conferences and stuff, I have much more respect for him. I mean, he's just a very honest, straightforward guy. Doesn't like to play a lot of the games that the press try to play, and he'll tell you that, you
know? Right.
So I have much more respect just from seeing him close up for an entire year, you know, much more respect for him.
Yeah, and always, there was a documentary that he did, and the first thing it shows him, I forget the name of it, but it shows him. At the very beginning, accepting the award, but he talked about how growing up, something he was always like second or third or something, like, you know, somebody else won something, and then somebody else won something. He was always, and it was a very humble thing. You learn how he grew up and all that kind of stuff. And again, you know, maybe had he not, a guy like that probably would have been successful, but, you know, had he not shot up to be like 6'11".
Right.
Where would you have been? Now, you got to assume that with the drive he's got, he probably would have been. But the way society, particularly white-dominated society, values Black people. You know, they value Black people in this corporate-driven thing. They'll value Black people who can make them money.
Right.
You know, if you can make us money, then we'll value. But if you can't make us money, then we'll put you then on this section where you go to jail, where you go to prison, you know, where we make money from that. Yeah, you know, we gotta make money from you one way or the other. Either we'll make money of you, make money off of you, or if you're an athlete, we'll make money, but you'll get to make some money too.
Right. you'll make a certain percentage, you know, right. A low percentage of what we're going to make.
Yeah, and as Mary Claire Dale was saying, like in NFL, you know, like you were saying, we'll get it both ways. If you're playing NFL, and again, we know eventually it's 100% injury, and you may end up really getting fucked up. Right. You know, then we're going to use racism to not pay you, to not pay you what right. we should pay you, and then you know,
it's just exploitation 360. You know what I'm saying? Right. 360 exploitation. We're gonna exploit you when we get you in there. You know, we're not gonna protect. We're not gonna give you guaranteed contracts. You know, 70% black. When things you care about come up, we're not gonna let you talk about it. Blah blah blah. And then when it's all over, when you're done out and we've used your body up and you're hurt, guess what? We're not gonna give you settlements because you're black also.
right. We get you coming and we get you going. Yeah. You know. And even I was like how LeBron was complaining about this whole the way the NBA, you know, did this whole thing. And why do you think all these stars are getting broken down? And, man, just shut up. You know, just be quiet.
You want that money, right? You want the money.
All right. You want
that $35 million.
Right.
You don't have to play. And then, you know, the guy, and they always prey on the guys who need it the most, who aren't the big stars. So they're like, right. Hey, we got to play. We don't have a choice.
That's right. Yeah. So in that industry, you're held hostage. You know, you're kind of held out no matter how much money you make.
Right.
You know, because your source of your money is you playing.
Hey, and that's what the guy, you know, LeBron is saying, you know, I tried to tell you guys. But those players he was trying to tell knew that at the time, but they were like, hey, guess what, LeBron? We ain't living like you. We don't right. got it like you. You right. know, we don't play. It ain't like, you know, if LeBron could skip, he could just retire right now. He could skip years. He's fine.
Right.
Most of the players can't do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hence $40 million slaves. I've just been reminded that the 15th anniversary of being a public is July 11th. So okay.
No party set up.
I mean, we talk about 40 minutes. Is that a party? Is a plan?
Not really.
But to your point, maybe we should do our. We should do something at Chocolat.
Yes,
definitely. We should do an event. We should do a podcast.
Definitely.
Do a podcast from Chocolat to celebrate the 15th anniversary.
And you know, restrictions. No more restrictions in New York City. No more.
Pandemic is over.
We could pack them in, Chocolat.
Like that slave ship. Just pack them in. Can we get two more in there? All right. Anything else to go over? We talked about injuries, the miracle, Donovan, poor Donovan Mitchell. I'm just wondering, you saw in Philadelphia. I wonder if these collapses, man. You know, I'm wondering about this ongoing tension of these predominantly white fans and black players. And how what is that tension about, particularly when you have teams of collapses and all that? Do you all of a sudden, you know, maybe we ought to have some white fans on sometimes. We need to have some white fans on who hate black people, but who are like season ticket holders at the 76ers games. How do you reconcile that? Like,
They're not going to admit it, you know. Yeah. It's worse to be called a racist than to be a racist.
Right? I know. Just don't call me one.
Don't call me one.
Yeah, that'll be. Maybe we'll do that on July 11th. I don't like black people. I just like the 76ers. I don't like.
We need the truth serum, you know, for that.
Yeah, I know.
But what do you think about all these football players being asked if they've taken? If they've gotten vaccinated and they won't answer, like and LeBron, in fairness, did that also. He wouldn't say whether he was vaccinated. He said it was a personal decision. But like the new Jets quarterback, I think Zach Wilson, number 2 overall pick, they asked him if he was vaccinated. He says a personal decision. He won't tell. McCaffrey, from the running back from the Panthers and went to Stanford. He's saying, it's a personal decision. I'm not going to. What is that all about?
Well, I think you know what it's about. I'm not sure, but it's something, some kind of way it has to do with anti-vaxxers. Probably everybody says they probably voted for voted for POTUS, that the last clown that was in the White House. I guarantee you, you know, I wonder what percent. So that's my first take. Anybody says that probably voted for that clown.
Ron said it too.
Well, maybe he did too. But I think. Well, not, I think Chris Paul got vaccinated. I think
that's the rumor.
That's the rumor he got vaccinated. But you know, I think politically, and again, this is a stereotypical statement, but a lot of athletes. I mean, I was looking at the old thing of Will Chamberlain, who was a conservative Republican, and probably again, man, we'd have to talk about this or talk to somebody like DeMar Davis. A lot of these guys may be more conservative than you think. Think about it. You know, they kind of grow up, and by the time they get identified as being valuable, they are put in this bubble.
Right.
By this white bubble, whether you know, these big universities, where they begin to college.
From high school, probably.
Yeah, that you are not like these other people, these other blacks.
Right.
You know, you can do something with your family. You could be so we're going to treat you differently.
Right.
Than the other blacks,
right?
You know, and I guess I think that some kind of way, man, this sort of slave mentality or whatever, that the white man's ice is in fact colder, because all the best houses that you see, the best land, the best this, the best white people always seem to the best bottles of wine, the best this, and if I hang with them, they can also get me to the land of milk and honey,
right.
You know. So I just think you see enough of this stuff, man, you know, and you start thinking about it. And then, you know, a guy like Donald Trump and that whole group of storming the White House, yeah, I don't know, maybe they got something there. You know, maybe I shouldn't, you know, whatever that shit fucking mechanism that goes in your mind that comes out thinking, yeah, I ain't gonna get vaccinated because it's all part of, you know, whatever. So I just think there's this conservative kind of thing. And until there's a George Floyd or Trayvon something where you get a peek, a glimpse at, you know, they just think you're nothing but another N-I-G-G-R. You know that, don't you? And you know, and you kind of get a glimpse. Damn, man, they see me. I thought, yeah, but then the curtain closed real quick.
And that goes to the fan issue too. I mean, that's another thing that should open their eyes to that. You know, right. Cheering. I'm watching the game. Like I can't help but think about it all the time when I'm watching the game and I see Embiid, you know, talking trash or, you know, and the crowd going crazy and he's soaking it up. And it's like 99% white people that you know would turn on you in a second.
Right, right. Exactly. And it's like, right. And probably are now as we speak. The minute.
Right. Right. As soon as you lost that game.
Right. You're big African. I mean, yeah. But, you know, again, it's probably, and you look at the entire, there many times the entire world is white.
Right.
The people who sell the houses, or you know, the real estate people, the bankers, most cases the agents. You know, you live in this world because you're making the people, the publicists. You know, if you look at the entire world is white. White control. Now, the white control might put some black folks around you just to create the illusion.
Right.
That some black folks there. But you're like your world.
Like the assistant to the agent, you know?
Yeah, the runner.
Right.
You know, the runner. Yeah, and even that name, the runner. You know,
all the agents' assistants are usually black.
Yeah, hey man. Yeah, brother, oh God, man.
That's like six podcasts right there.
Yeah. That's a 1619 project. That's what it is. The 1619 project. Yeah. Oh man. All right. Well, with that, you know, enjoy the rest of the day. Thanks for another great, great discussion. Our listeners, be safe. Continue to be smart.
Be safe. Keep following us on Instagram at BrosPod, on Twitter at BrosPod. And we're brought to you by Bet Online. Get out there and bet on these games.
Yes. Go broke. All right. And God bless. We'll be right back.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.